It's the Rokan Show on 720 WGN. Ro and Anna are off today. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. Matt Bubala in this afternoon with Judy up in the news and Violetta and Kevin hanging out as well. Joining us in studio right now is Erica Wozniak and Joanna Klonsky. They are two-thirds of the trio that hosts the Girl Talk at the Hideout every month. Hello, ladies. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Thank you very much for being here with us.
Thanks so much for having
us. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The Girl Talk at the Hideout this month, December 27th. That's at 1354 West Wabanzia. What happens at the Girl Talk?
The Girl Talk is, this is Joanna, by the way. Thank you so much for having us. We started the Girl Talk as a monthly live in-person talk show at the Hideout. Mm-hmm. And we started it really because we were looking around at all of these cool events happening every month and thinking, our city is so amazing and so full of amazing women. Why isn't there just a place for us to hang out and talk and tell our stories and feature some of the cool women who are doing awesome stuff in this town? And so, you know,
and
the rest is history.
And very sexistly, just knock men right out of it. Just say, no, yes, men allowed. That's the Girl Talk.
Well, men are allowed to come and are encouraged to come, but sure. We don't have any men on the show.
Ever? Has there ever been a male guest on
the
show?
Nope, and there won't be.
That's kind of the whole point.
If Bernie Sanders said, Erica, I'd really love to be on the show,
I would say Sharon can come on up.
All right.
You should stick come to the show and hang out in the audience and hang out with us afterwards.
Yeah.
That could happen.
Yeah.
You guys have been doing the show since April. What's coming up on the December 27th show?
Well, we have an amazing show coming up. We have three Muslim women activists who are also feminists. So we have Nadia Mohajir. She's the founder of Heart Women and Girls. We also have a woman named Hind Maki. She's an interfaith educator. And then we have Rima Ahmad, who works for CARE Chicago. So three really amazing women who are doing amazing work in the Muslim community. So we're really excited to hear from them.
Yeah, that sounds like a fascinating show. You two have a lot of... So Joanna Klonsky is one of Crane's 40 Under 40. You run your own firm. Describe what you do for us.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a political strategist, communication strategist. I work with political candidates, government officials, advocacy organizations, and generally on the progressive Democratic side of the world.
Can you reveal some of them? Is that like a patient-doctor privilege?
No, it's not a secret. Primarily, you might have heard of the Progressive Caucus in the Chicago City Council. Okay. I also work with the Black Caucus. I was excited to work on Kim Fox's campaign for state's attorney. We won that one just back in March. So those are some of the examples. I worked for Chuy Garcia when he ran for mayor.
So these emails that have come out recently must be very interesting to you.
They were very interesting. As I was starting to say before we were on air, I have not read all 3,000 because I do have other things to do with my life. But
you did tweet yesterday that you were sitting in a bar where you're supposed to be social and instead you're on your phone reading emails.
I was being super antisocial last night when the news broke around, 8 or 9 o'clock. I was out in a bar with some friends who were in town for the holidays and started getting tons of texts like, have you seen the emails? The emails have been released. And so it was sort of irresistible to just check out from the social scene that I was in and start scrolling through on my phone and getting an inside glimpse of what's been going on inside the fifth floor.
I know you haven't read the 3,000 as of yet, but what you scrolled through last night, was there anything where you're like, oh my God, because there's no smoking gun, but just very interesting insights into how you get to Rahm and how he responds. And
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, smoking gun. It's not about a smoking gun. It's about how does Rahm think, how does Rahm operate, and who has super easy access to him? Who has this Gmail account where they can just get to him anytime they want? What you see is a lot of big, huge donors have very easy access to him. No surprise there. One person who shows up a lot in those emails is the governor, Bruce Rauner, mostly pushing a very anti-union agenda. Again, no shocker there. We know the governor wants to break the unions in this state. How much, those emails are from before he was in office.
So
how much influence he was really having over the mayoral administration is pretty interesting to see.
And that, you know, they used to fight and spat a little bit by email when they were just friends and not political frenemies, as they maybe are now. But, you know, that Rahm wrote back an email, I love you. We're giving tax breaks to the hotel. We're helping out McCormick Place. Don't worry. Yeah. I've got your back, basically, is what he's saying.
That one was troubling. Definitely. He was like, I love you so much. Okay.
Well, maybe that's their joking. Yeah, that's the tough thing about an email, right?
You never know,
because you don't know what was the you don't know how they know each other and whether they tease each other or what they do.
Yeah, but you do know
they vacation together. They're buddies.
Yeah, that was never a secret that they were very close. Rauner gave his campaign lots of money and was a big champion for him over the years. And so, you know, the question is now, what does it mean for their relationship going forward? Given everything that's going on in Springfield, or what's not going on in Springfield, I should say.
Precisely.
We'll talk more about the girl talk, and I want to find more about Joanna's insights or her thoughts on the relationship between the two, because we're talking about that off the air, wondering what is the real relationship between Governor Rauner and Rahm Emanuel. Also more with Erica Wozniak, who is a everyday hero, according to the American Federation of Teachers, and is a big advocate for more money to schools and not for stadiums. I want to ask you about the Paul Center, of course, coming up in a little bit as well. 5:15, let's get a check of traffic upstairs with Violetta Podramatic. Matt Bubala in for Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantes here on 720 WGN. In studio with us is Erica Wozniak and Joanna Klonsky, two-thirds of the hideout of the Girl Talk, which appears at the Hideout every month. This month, December 27th, the Hideout, 1354 West Wabanzia. Go to Facebook.com/TheGirlTalk for more information. We'll jump back to Rauner. Well, I'll let you compose your thoughts, Joanna. Let me talk to Erica for a minute here. CPS has been, so you're a CPS teacher.
Yes.
You have been for how many years?
13.
An award-winning CPS teacher, loved by your students. You post about it all the time. You love your job. That seriously shines through. But you've been very frustrated. And you hashtag a lot of times photos, schools, not stadiums, right?
Schools, not stadiums.
Schools,
yes.
Not stadiums. So the DePaul Arena going in at McCormick Place has been a particular frustration for you, right?
Yes.
Tell me why. Because athletics are important in some aspects to college programs, things like that, city revenue, tourism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm imagining when we're so underfunded in other areas, that just drives you insane.
Yeah. I mean, when they announced that they were building the arena, it was within the same week that they announced that they were closing 49 public schools. And perhaps if they had announced it at the same time that or announced it for you, University of Chicago or maybe a public school, it would have been different. But given the I went to DePaul, so given the education that I got at DePaul, learning that you should put others before yourself, and just the Catholic values that I learned there, I'm Catholic, I just was flabbergasted and couldn't believe that was happening. To boot, it's at McCormick Place, which is so far away from the school itself.
Yeah.
So it doesn't it doesn't really make sense. And at the time, Jerry Reinsdorf offered DePaul free rent at the United Center for 10 years. So it just made absolutely no sense whatsoever to me. So I just started protesting it, and I haven't stopped. So most recently, I asked for DePaul to donate the naming rights. Wintrust announced that they were buying the naming rights to the stadium. And I delivered a petition to DePaul directly and asked them to give those naming rights back to CPS in lieu of the fact that they essentially, in my mind, took money off of the backs of Chicago public school students.
In your mind, that's what happened. But the administration would say that's not what happened at all. These are two completely separate things, right?
Yeah. I mean,
because there's a million different projects that go on that we spend money on that you could say, okay, why are we doing that on the lakefront? Why are we doing this? I bet you'd love to send an email to Ken Griffin and say, hey, Ken, as long as you got $12 million to separate the bike paths on the lakefront, how about a few million for Chicago Public Schools?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's a matter of putting needs before wants.
Right.
So if we're closing 49 schools, we shouldn't be building giving $55 million public tax dollars to a private wealthy university and private wealthy landowners to build an absolutely unnecessary basketball stadium. So that was my whole mind frame there, that how are we doing this and how is this fair to kids?
Yeah.
And how are Chicago public school students someday going to be able to attend a university like DePaul if their schools are being closed and if their sports programs are being slashed? So I haven't gotten any response from DePaul after I delivered the petition, but Wintrust, they also haven't announced how much money they're actually getting for the naming rights.
Right.
So I have a feeling that they're holding back on that, and I'll just wait.
Keep fighting. and I imagine, though, that the administration, the state would say, while DePaul is kind of our anchor tenant, that we're going to have, you know, tons of events, tons of things we want to have here. I mean, let's face it. I don't know if you go to many conferences. I imagine you guys do around the country. Sure. This is one of the worst places to have to go to a conference or an event. It's not near anything. The hotels aren't nearby. There's, you know, you have to travel so much. If you go to San Diego to the convention center, you land at the airport. 5 minutes later, you're there. Bars, restaurants, Petco Field, everything right there, right? It's amazing. Chicago's from a tough for place on that, and we need to do more. I don't know that that's the answer, but I can understand where they're trying to work out areas, ways to make this more of a destination area for conferences and events to come to town.
Yeah, well, I think it's another question too about what you're saying is not wrong, but it's also about how we use those TIF dollars, those taxpayer dollars to right. support private projects, and when and where is that appropriate. Did DePaul need that money to get that project done, or could they have gotten it funded through other means?
So I don't know enough about it. Is that a private project? I mean, the city or the state owns this, the building, don't we? We're just letting DePaul use it. I imagine we're getting something out of this, right?
Well, so MPEA, the Metropolitan Peer Exposition,
the McPeer,
yeah,
right,
authority.
Okay.
They own the land.
Okay.
So when they use the $55 million, when they originally announced it, they said that they were giving that money to DePaul. After we delivered our petition and a lot of advocacy, not just me, so many other people, they then refinanced so that they were buying the land. So that's why I directed my attention towards DePaul directly. Mm-hmm. And let me just be clear, I have no problem with DePaul, like Joanna
sure.
said, I have no problem with them building a stadium. I think they should just use their own money. That's
yeah.
that's the whole point.
But if you were running DePaul, and I said to you, Erica, as running DePaul, here's your option. You could go spend $55 million to build the stadium, or we'll give it to you. It would be tough to say, yeah, I'll spend my own money on that, wouldn't it?
Well, I would say all of the things that I teach at my school and all of the things that, you know, my school stands for,
right.
why don't you just keep your money and help fund Chicago Public Schools?
Yeah.
I think that's the Vincentian Catholic thing to do.
They're not going to vote you in to run DePaul anytime soon. I'm just saying.
Probably not.
Love the leadership ideas and love the thought process. And that's how we should be, right? But big business gets in the way.
Can I say one more thing on this?
Of course you can.
All that aside, or in addition to that, I think Wintrust, which just paid a lot of money for the naming rights, it would be, I'm a PR person, so I think along
yes.
these lines, it would be very, very good, smart PR move for them to really think about, is there a way to give back to CPS and make it clear that they're contributing.
Is anybody else seeing this as CPS versus this stadium besides people in this room, though? I mean, I know you saw it that way, especially because the timing was so close. But I think everybody else would argue that's apples and oranges, wouldn't they?
Well, 3,000 people signed my original petition and 1,400 people signed my last petition. So I think that there are many people, especially in the city. I mean, if you bring it up, say, wait, what do
you
mean?
I imagine you go to anybody where there's a school that was closed down. Now their kids are going further
sure.
away to a school that they don't want them
crossing
going to.
Game lines, et
or,
yeah,
yeah. Or get safe passage areas. They'd be say, yes, we'd like the school back and we'd like more money for the schools.
Well, and just the basic cuts that we felt this year. I mean, in special education, in sports programs, which is something that I've been really focused on. It's just basic things that kids deserve to have at school and they're not getting, but we have a basketball stadium for DePaul. Just
That's Erica Wozniak and Joanna Klonsky. They're in studio right now with the Girl Talk. It's going to be at the Hideout on December 27th. After the news, we'll talk a little bit more about CPS and what's going on there and Joanna's thoughts on Governor Rauner and Rahm Emanuel. News is next on 720 WGN. The Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantes on 720 WGN. Ro and Anna are away today. Happy holidays, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you today and tomorrow, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. The hustle and bustle of Chicago goes by. But here in studio, we have Joanna Klonsky and Erica Wozniak from The Girl Talk. Their next show is December 27th, next week, at The Hideout, 1354 West Wabanzia. We're talking a lot about the school system and the CPS and the different challenges that it faces right now, both at the hands of Mayor Emanuel and Governor Rauner. So, Joanna, we were talking about this off air earlier a little bit. So, Governor Rauner just vetoed how much money that was going to CPS?
Well, it was a a massive hundreds of million dollar pension funding bill for CPS.
Like 254 million, something like that.
I think it might have been 215. It blows a $215 million hole in the CPS budget.
Which means as we enter the new year, there might be layoffs and other things happening in CPS before the school year's out, right, Erica?
I hope not.
Yeah,
but that's the threat,
it's possible, right?
Right?
And we're talking about a situation in which these schools have already faced massive budget cuts this year, last year, and in recent years. And now it seems like the governor's goal might just be to burn the whole system to the ground and just, you know, force us to beg for mercy and agree to whatever his union busting demands might be. And so it's really important that those of us who actually care about CPS really push back hard against that and make sure that doesn't go down.
Was the whole contract, Erica, that you guys just signed based on that money happening? I mean, does that change anything in the contract that you just signed? Because the city was going to take care of a lot of things based on the agreements that you guys just made in that contract, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, look, when you sign a contract, you sign a contract. So whatever CPS agreed to, they need to uphold. So they haven't always done that in the past.
That's true.
However, how do you bargain unless it's in good faith?
Yeah.
So the contract that we just signed, we expect to be upheld. And if it's not upheld, that's going to be a huge problem.
Real quick, we had a couple of texts saying, complaining about teachers, you know, begging for money and the pensions and the time off and everything else.
Were they signed Bruce?
They were not. Now stop it, Joanna. Now let's clear something up here. When you are a teacher and you're earning your pension, that's going to make you so rich and wealthy someday, Erica. The fact is, you are not putting into Social Security. Am I right?
Yeah, we don't get Social Security. We also pay into our pensions as well.
You pay into your pension, and you're not going to get Social Security someday. My wife went through the same thing. So whenever it's like, oh, well, the teachers are getting these pensions, the teachers are making sacrifices and aren't eligible for Social Security based on this service down the road. So it's not like it's just, hey, we're getting this pension and everything else.
Correct.
Which some other government services do get.
Right.
Yeah, and still earn time into Social Security, don't they?
I'm not sure about other unions, but what I know is that I've never missed a pension payment. All of the CPS teachers have never missed a pension payment. So.
Well, it's just taken out of your check, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. So we uphold our part of the bargain of the pension agreement.
And the funny thing is the part that has gotten the city into so much trouble was negotiated by the city into a previous contract years ago where they were going to pick up, and that was whatever reason, they negotiated that into a contract long ago that they were going to pick up the pension for a while. They kind of forgot to keep doing that, which got the city in all this trouble. It's not because the teachers kept asking for more and more and more and more. The city offered in negotiation, we're going to pick up the pension for a while.
Exactly.
And there we go.
Exactly.
So we were talking about off the air, Joanna, that Governor Rauner vetoes this money. And that puts Rahm in a tough place. And Rahm and him, we know, have been good friends in the past.
Sure.
And we see that he writes I love you in emails. And they vacation together.
Right.
So the question
in a
is...
wine club, I believe, together. Some sort of
well,
a wine
Governor
club.
Well, Governor Rauner was in a wine club, $150,000 buy-in on the wine club. But Rahm had a photo of him walking around with a bottle of wine from it. Anywho. So this, on the surface, seems like a real... bad breakup between Jen and Ross here on the show, or Ross and Rachel, and it's going to go badly. But
get your friend's references.
I'm sorry. Well, I had the right name. It was Jen, but she was Rachel, and then Ross.
Ross and
Anyways,
Rachel. Yeah.
It seems like we're headed to bad times on Friends. But I'm wondering if is that really how it works? Are they is there the schism there now between them, or does this play some way into Rahm's hands that he's now going to be forced to do some terrible things? But I didn't want to do this. I negotiated this with you, CPS, and I want you to do better. And I'm mad at Bruce. Doggone him that he did this to us. Sorry, but this is how it's going to work now.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think your theory might be right that that's sort of the way this has been staged. But, you know, who can tell? I don't really care what their personal relationship is like. Are they friends? Are they not friends? Are they mad at each other? I don't really care. What I care about is CPS going to be funded or not? Are we going to have a public school system in this city? And if we don't have one that's functional, how do we continue to really compete as a city? I mean, what kind of a major American city doesn't have a functional, funded school system?
Yeah.
Who wants to live in a city where you can't send your kids to school? So... you know, Rahm has this hardcore, tough guy reputation, and now he's got to back it up and show up in Springfield and make sure this gets taken care of. And I think we also need to see him play a really strong role in the 2018 election, making sure, you know, if you care about CPS being funded, this governor can't be our governor anymore. And so Rahm Emanuel, as a leader in the Democratic Party, really has to stand up strongly and make sure that he's doing everything he can to support whoever the Democratic Party nominee is for governor.
Well, of course, Rahm wants CPS funded, but he also wants charter schools. They've also signed questionable contracts.
Yep.
So where is his true allegiance? Will he really fight hard against Governor Rauner, do you think, come next election?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't have a ton of faith
Look
in him right
now.
Look
into your crystal ball. Shake it up. And then what pops up on that?
He better. He needs to. It's that important. I hope he does. That's all I can say. It's hard to predict what the guy's going to do.
But you're not putting a lot of faith into it, it sounds like. I mean, is it better for him to know, is the devil you know better for him? You know, it's not like if he had a Democratic governor for sure in office that things would necessarily go better for Rahm. In theory, they would. But, you know, so much depends on Madigan, so much depends on the governor, so much depends on a million different things as to whether or not it's truly going to be helpful to him to not have his friend who maybe were opposed to certain things. But I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they're sort of secretly winking at each other from across the room.
No, I wouldn't be surprised either. And I think that the mayor hasn't been deceptive in that he's been clear that he's not totally bought in with the concept of labor unions. He hasn't pretended that he is. In that sense, he and the governor are very much aligned. They are no friend to the teachers union, for example. We've always known that. So in a lot of respects, their agenda has been aligned. We see where that's gotten us. It hasn't been good for the school system. It hasn't been good for our neighborhoods. And so obviously it's time to change course here.
Yeah. A lot of texters asking about why should the state be paying for this pension when it's the city's issue?
Well, that's actually the state law. It's not something that happened, I think, in 1995 that was negotiated by the state. So Chicago teachers are actually paying into all of the state teachers' pensions as we pay into our own pensions. And I think we're paying more into it. I'm not as well versed on the pension issue, to be honest with you. But that's something that is on a state level. It's not on a city level. And that's why
the money was going to come from the state.
Exactly.
5:45 in the afternoon. Let's get a check of the cars upstairs. There's Violetta Podramatic. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN in for Ro and Anna. Erica Wozniak and Joanna Klonsky from The Girl Talk are in studio with us for a few more minutes here on 720 WGN. What else is going on? So who do you want to see run for governor?
You know, my thing about the governor's race is I just want to make sure there's a good, strong, progressive candidate in the race. We're hearing a lot of names thrown around, a lot of billionaires' names thrown around who seem like they might be nice people, but are they really going to get that Democratic Party base fired up in a primary election? You know, I was on WGN radio yesterday afternoon, and we were talking about the same question, and I was bringing up the fact that, you know, I think it was like 987,000 Illinois Democratic primary voters voted for Bernie Sanders back in March.
Mm-hmm.
You really need someone who's going to get those folks excited again.
Yeah.
You can't really, like, thumb your nose at 987,000 people.
Okay, but if 987,000 people voted for Bernie Sanders, the farthest left we've had as a choice in a while,
for
right?
Sure, yes.
Are they really going to say, yeah, I'm not excited, I'll just vote for Rauner?
No, that's not the question. The question is, they'll vote for whoever the Democratic Party
right.
nominee is. But are they going to be fired up about it? Are they going to go to the mat for that person? Are they going
to
do...
Help get other people to vote for him, too?
That was the same logic that people had about Hillary, right? Where they were like, well, people are... It's not like they're going to go vote for Trump. Of course, a lot of people voted for Hillary. Some people didn't feel that excited about her and stayed home.
And then just didn't vote.
Yeah, I mean, Hillary won Illinois. It's not that they didn't turn out for her, but were they excited about her? Were they ready to, you know, pound the pavement for her, raise money for her? I think we need... If we're going to beat the governor who just dropped $50 million into his campaign account earlier this afternoon, and there's more where that comes from.
Yeah.
If we're going to beat that guy, we've got to get someone who's got some grassroots energy and excitement behind him.
Do you think Rahm Emanuel will help in that fight? Will he really stick his neck out or will he just sort of back off on it?
Yeah, I don't know. I hope so.
You worked heavily with Chuy Garcia when he ran against Rahm.
Yeah, in the runoff. Yeah.
And what went wrong there, or what happened? Is it just Rahm's got too much power, too much money? Was Chewy not exciting enough? Did he not?
No, I think Chewy had an enthusiastic movement around him, the likes of which our city hasn't seen in a long time. I think that Chewy, we were up against huge money.
Sure.
And I don't think that folks were all the way ready for that runoff. I mean, it came as a shock to everyone. It was the first runoff in Chicago history.
Yeah.
And so given the disadvantages we were in, we were under, I think that Chewy and the movement around him pulled off something really incredible. Going up against that money, going up against the power of incumbency, you know, Rahm's campaign was able, because they had so much money on air early, they were really able to define Chewy in a dishonest and inaccurate way as some sort of like incompetent person. Chewy's a very experienced elected leader. He's been in government for, you know, I don't know, 3 decades now. Yeah. I can't remember the exact number of years anymore. But being able to define him early on, I think, made it really difficult for him to pull it off.
Well, and he came in late. We didn't know who, I mean, as the everyday woman, I didn't know who he was until he announced it, because I'm not involved in Chicago politics.
Sure.
Exactly. So just coming in a little bit later, we thought that Karen was going to run, and he came in a little bit later. But obviously they did incredible things in pushing the election to a runoff. I mean, and so much good has come from that too.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw Heather Sharon over at DNA had a story today laying out all the Chewy Garcia campaign policy proposals
that
for
Rahm
the campaign that Rahm has adopted in the last year.
Well, I imagine there's a lot of that probably in every campaign, right? That what got people fired up and see if you can win them over with a little bit of that stuff.
Exactly.
Erica, you've been a public school teacher here for 13 years now. What school are you at?
I'm at Oriole Park Elementary School.
Okay. And what is teaching like these days? At 13 years in, has it changed a lot? We have a lot of Common Core. We do a lot of teaching towards testing instead of teaching, you know, the whole student, things like that. What's your feeling on the state of education in Illinois?
Yeah, it's going in a scary direction. Common Core is definitely something that teachers obviously didn't put it together. It was people who are thinking about numbers.
Right.
The evaluation systems as well are based on test scores, and even just the tests that we're taking, there are a few tests that, in my mind, maybe not everybody agrees with me, are sort of beneficial, and we're phasing those tests out to, those were the NWEA tests, and we're phasing those out to go into these PARC tests, which actually don't make a lot of sense and
been very controversial.
Parents are opting their kids out of them, and it just giving a kid a test that's not meaningful to them, that they're not going to know the results, I don't know what I need to teach them after the test, is just, it's just bad practice.
Do you think in general the whole idea of testing is an awful thing? When we grew up, we took the Iowa Test of Basic Skills. My kids still do that because you want to get a gauge on where they're at and what they need to learn and what they need to do. You don't want to create a system, I don't think anybody does, where the teachers spend their whole year teaching kids to do well on this one test so that the school still has funding afterwards. That's the scary part of it. But the general idea of, you know, we need to do some testing so we see where the kids are at, so we see where there needs to be more work, that seems to make sense. Where did it all go awry?
Well, it went awry when you test every single student in every single grade, every single year. The idea of, like I said before, me giving a test to my students. If I'm giving a test to my students and I'm spending countless hours on said test, then I should immediately get the results of the test and I should immediately know what I need to teach my students so that I can address whatever issues there might be. Or maybe there's a student who does so well, so that I know that I need to challenge him or her. And that's the test that we're currently taking or going to take, the PARC test. We don't get the results for a year and a half later sometimes.
Why? Because it's not about that. It's just a gauge, and they don't want you to look at it as something you need to worry about and then teach towards. They just want to get a gauge on where everybody's at.
They want to get a gauge on where everybody's at. And it's also, it's run by Pearson, and Pearson is a major conglomerate in the world. I mean, they make so much money off of these tests, and we're taking this turn of money, just making money off of education, and that's not what it should be. It should be kids learning so that they can be better humans and functioning members of society and making the world a better place.
That's why she's considered a hero teacher by the American Federation of Teachers. Yep. Erica Wozniak, Joanna Klonsky, one of Crane's 40 under 40. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm going for the 800 under 45, but I only got a couple days left. They'll be appearing at the Hideout on December 27th. That's at 1354 West Wabanzia. Find them on Facebook, facebook.com/thegirltalk. Ladies, thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
Bubala on 720 WGN.